Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. The agents wrote the copy and managed the timelines, while our human creative director made sure it all made sense. Easy. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
In District 10, Bradlander wins. In District 12, we have Micah Lasher winning against Alex Boras, George Conway, and Jack Kennedy Schlossberg. Jack Schlossberg in particular ran kind of an oddball campaign where he was, you know, posting a lot of random stuff. But I don't know how seriously he was taking it. But you know who was taking it seriously is Micah Lasher. We have other districts where Zoran-endorsed candidates just absolutely sweeped against the established candidates, the establishment candidates. These are all people who are refusing to take special interest money, who don't F with AIPAC, who don't want to further the old ways of the Democratic Party. So Bradlander in particular ran as a progressive, and he talked a lot about the economy, a lot about affordability. He talked a lot about abolishing ICE, about all of this, and it worked. We have Claire Valdez in New York's 7th District. She won the open house seat. We have another Mamdani-backed upset, which is Daria Laza Chevalier, who narrowly defeated a sitting representative as well. So the point that I'm trying to make is that there is a sea change within the Democratic Party. A very respected analyst on Twitter that I follow, Zachary Donini, said, "The Democratic Tea Party is here. Tonight is shaping up to be one of the more consequential nights in recent Democratic politics, with Mamdani and DSA-endorsed candidates reforming the party." So one more time, there is a sea change in the Democratic Party. Whether you want to talk about Bradlander in District 10 beating Dan Goldman, who is a sitting rep, whether you want to talk about District 12 or the other districts where Mamdani endorsed candidates sweeped. One more time, let me reiterate, it is the rejection of insidious special interest groups. It is the laser focus on the economy and the willingness to call out issues that Democrats have been walking around for years. How come no Democrats are actually willing to call out the West Bank settlements? How come no Democrats are actually able to call out what Israel is doing in Gaza in a very firm, clear-handed manner? It's just not happening. And when it does, those candidates end up sweeping. We can see this model across the country. The Democratic Party is changing. And Mike and I are going to talk about how we can be a part of it, how we can push it in the right direction, and how we can continue to win over the hearts and minds of voters. If you appreciate these videos on the Adam Mockler Substack, the Mike Nellis Substack, and our YouTubes, make sure you hit the like button, hit the heart button. We're going to talk about a lot today. So Mike, take it off.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot to unpack from yesterday's primaries, and I don't think the narrative coming out of it is as clear as a lot of other people seem to think that it is. I mean, Mamdani went 3-for-3, and so I'm going to start there, which is to say that Zoran is a much more savvy politician than his critics like to give him credit for, and I think they need to reassess how they're approaching him. Right. And I like Zoran. I actually think he's doing a really good job because he understands that a core function of being the mayor of New York City or the mayor of any place is constituent services and delivering for the people, which, frankly, I think at this moment in time, DSA is doing a much better job of as a whole, delivering through the organizations and the community and mutual aid that they create. And then Zoran's doing it now as mayor of New York City, which is solidifying his position in these primaries. So I give him a lot of credit for that. There are a couple of things, though, that give me a little bit of pause. I think that one of the three candidates, Daria Ziza, how do you say her name? You said it, Adam, and I don't want to say it wrong.
It is Daria Liza.
Daria Liza. Okay. I just didn't want to say it wrong. It's like, I do think like she may be problematic for his movement, given some of the things that she has said in the past. And we'll see if they're able to sort of like overcome that. I'll also say like the Lasher versus Boras versus Schlossberg versus George Conway and 50 other candidates that were running in that race. I declined to work with anybody in that race because it sounded like an absolute mess. Like the idea that special interests are being rejected, I think is right. I mean, AIPAC in particular is being rejected in Democratic primaries. And if you don't have a good answer for that, it's an issue. But like Lasher is much more of an establishment. Dem was basically the heir apparent to Congressman Nadler. Boris, they spent an unbelievable amount of money to defeat him from the AI super PACs because Boris is the architect of New York state law on AI. So there is still some special interest influencing here that scares the hell out of me. And like the AI companies are getting their winners in a lot of these primaries. So I think we need to like take a beat and acknowledge that. I'll mention on like, and I love George Conway. Okay. I like George Conway a lot. You know, he did not do very well. He got like 6 or 7% or something like that. And then the Kennedy kid also did very poorly despite getting outsized attention. And I'll talk about Schlossberg for just a second. I have a longstanding dislike of Nepo babies. Like I just do not like people that think that they're entitled to things because of what their last name is or what family that they came from. And to me, the Kennedy kids never had a real job, ran a very odd campaign, in my opinion, was very online and just annoys me. And I don't think I've ever seen a congressional candidate get more MS Now time while being in basically high single digits in a congressional primary before. Like that's ridiculous to me. So it's like born on third base. Like if he wants to prove, and this is my advice to any influencer out there who wants to try to go run for office. If you want to actually be serious as an elected official, go run for local office, go run for city council, go run for state Senate, go take your platform and be useful that way. I'm kind of like annoyed at this trend of like people who are like, I'm famous on the internet. And so I can go be a member of Congress. And like, that's not what it is. And I don't like the revolving door between influencer and Congress that's sort of developing right now. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is very emblematic of that. Like leaving her job in the middle of her term to essentially go start a podcast and go on The View and write a book pisses me off. I think you see a little bit of that with Jasmine Crockett. And I don't necessarily want to go down that rabbit hole, but I worry about that too. I just think it's becoming like a back and forth thing that I really, really don't like. And it's why, and I get that, I know you get this in your comments all the time, Adam, is like, I get people that are like, Mike, you should run for president. Mike, you should run for Congress. Be like, no, I'm not at this moment in time the right person to run for Congress in my district. I might be the right person to run for alderman or state senate or committeeman at some point in my life, but we shouldn't be thrusting people into positions they're not ready for. And I think I admire the people of this district because the top two candidates were the people who were the most qualified to be members of Congress, which is Lasher with a lot of experience working with Nadler, Boris having done the work in the state senate to take on AI companies. And by the way, I had him on my show. I'm actually really bummed that he lost. And I hope that he stays in the fight and runs for something else, because I think he'll be an amazing leader in the Democratic Party. And I'm confused about why Mamdani did not endorse him, which might be a function of him not thinking Boris could win and Mamdani wanting to get 3 for 3, which is, by the way, smart, savvy politics that I would expect of him. And then I'll just add one more thought before I hand it back to you. It is, the media is going to overestimate New York City politics. And I'm not downplaying what DSA has accomplished in New York City. I think it is impressive and I don't want to take it away, but it is not reflective of what happens in battleground districts around the country. Like there is not a yet full Democratic Party, Tea Party sort of thing happening here. Maybe it'll come. I'm not saying it's not coming. And I do think that candidates that are running need to be able to navigate the sea changes, particularly on Israel. And people are really pissed about that. But New York City is not the rest of the country. Okay. It's where the media hubs live. So it's going to get over indexed. But we did this in 2018. We did it in 2020. We did it in 2022. We did it in 2024. It was this idea that the Tea Party was coming because of a few primaries in New York City. It happened last year where they talked about Zohra Mamdani winning. But like Abigail Spanberger did really well. And Mikey Sherrill did really well too. So it's just, I don't think it's the same kind of thing. And I would just caution everybody, be excited and enjoy it because it's a victory. But it's not the full Tea Party that we were promised in 2010 or anything like that. So just be mindful of that.
I think that to build on your point, I think it's really worth pointing out the supermajority way of thinking, which is that different candidates can excel in different areas. Zohran Mamdani is like perfect for New York. It's like he was born to do this in New York and he's doing a brilliant job. But if we plucked him out of New York City and tried to place him in Andy Beshear's spot, the governor of Kentucky, it wouldn't work out as well. Yeah, he would lose immediately and vice versa. Andy Beshear probably wouldn't do well in New York just due to the way that things work. So we need
could I add something? Which is like, you know, we defeated, I worked on this race in Omaha, Nebraska, which is my hometown. We defeated the longest serving Republican mayor in the country, a woman by the name of Jean Stothert, with a Democratic former cop who was the county treasurer. His name's John Ewing. He's really great. He's the mayor now. He's doing an awesome job. Like if we had run Mamdani there, if we'd run a DSA style candidate, they would have lost. And I think the one thing that people just kind of have to understand is the nation is not necessarily governed by you know, the most liberal voter, or even the majority, were oftentimes governed by the, you know, median voter in Battle Creek, Michigan, right? And so we've kind of got to be mindful of that. And obviously, there's a primary out of Michigan right now. Some people are giving me shit about the candidate that I support in that in the comments. You're free to do that. I have no problem with it. But like, again, I think it's where can we elect really qualified, strong, progressive leaders? Like, I work for Michelle Wu in Boston. I love Michelle Wu. I think she might actually be the best mayor in the country right now and a model for how progressives can govern in a meaningful way, because she's one of the only major big city Democratic mayors that I think is really popular and really doing a good job without any like major marks against her. So I think we just got to be mindful of like different, we got to build a coalition, right? Like the system is literally rigged against us.
I think two things can be true at once. As I was saying, the supermajority thinking that we just laid out is necessary. We need to understand that different candidates can win in different areas, and that is actually good. We can have Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, who is progressive in his own right and stands up for human rights, human dignity. He stands up for trans folks. He stands up for any minority he was pushed down on. And he also focuses on affordability. Mamdani does the same thing, but in his own stylistic manner, because he lives in New York City, and I would consider him even more progressive. I mean, he's admittedly more progressive than Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, but that doesn't mean that we don't need Beshears across the country. However, I do think there is some sort of insurgency happening within the Democratic Party, even beyond New York. You can look at the Maine primary where the establishment candidate had to legit drop out. And now Graham Plattner is out here with like, you know, these different scandals, but he'll still likely win. I think in Michigan, don't quote me on this, but according to the polling, it seems like Abdul is either taking the lead or Abdul Al-Sayed is like tying with some of these other candidates. Like Haley Stevens, for example, I'm pretty sure is not doing too well. And then if we translate all of this over to New York City, as we said, New York City does not represent the entirety of the country. There are things happening in Illinois. There are things happening in Indiana, in Michigan, in the Midwest, other places that we live near that disprove this model. But what this does show is that people are effing pissed. People are pissed about the economy. People are pissed and they want something new. The reality that we need to, you know, reckon with is that establishment Democrats are just as unpopular as the Republican Party right now. We can't get it twisted. The Republican Party is uniquely unpopular due to Donald Trump's actions, but so are the establishment Dems. People are very jaded, so they're looking for some sort of alternative. I think a lot of people, like these right-wingers, or even establishment Dems themselves, can be very reductive in the way they talk about this. They'll say, oh, look at all these crazy socialists taking over New York. We're all going to be screwed. How could this ever happen? Why is every person 20 to 30 a socialist? And that is not what is happening here. It's the fact that people are sick of a system that they don't feel has been working for them, so they want to take risks. They're not going to keep voting for the same establishment candidates in a lot of these places when these establishment candidates have created an environment where young people, people like my age, people your age as well, people who are 20, 30, 40, 50, have had trouble gaining any sort of capital in any meaningful way throughout their lives. Young people my age are graduating college and are not able to find a job for a year. When they do find the job, their debt has already increased due to interest. When they do find the job, they're already, you know, supposed to be a year into the labor market and they can't gain capital. They can't get a house. It's hard to get a car. All of these things feel suffocating to voters, to young people. So the problem is, these right-wingers are very reductive and say everybody is a socialist now. No, these candidates who are coming from the outside that are anti-establishment candidates and unseating these establishment candidates are doing so because people are sick of the establishment, are sick of like the mealy mouth walking around it. Now, people are also being quite unfair in some ways. People keep throwing around the word liberal Zionist to describe Brad Lander. And I just think take the wins where you can get them. We have across New York City, you guys collectively across New York City, the voters there have unseated a bunch of mealy mouthed establishment candidates who can't even speak clearly about these issues. Brad Lander in particular is very, very clear eyed about this, is condemning everything that we should be condemning and is pushing us in the right direction. I don't think we should be isolating people with labels and saying, oh, this person isn't sufficiently progressive just because Brad Lander doesn't actually consider himself like pro Hamas or something like that. He's a Jewish guy, right? Who lives in New York City in a Jewish district. So you have to understand that people are going to be taking these positions that aren't always taken online. So I think there's just a lot to cover here regarding the insurgency in the Democratic Party, people being unhappy. And one more thing to add is that Zohran Mamdani has been doing quite a brilliant job. I was a big fan of the way he ran his campaign, but campaigning and governing are notoriously way, way different. He even quoted Mario Cuomo, as Zohran did in his victory speech, saying that like, it was like campaigning is like poetry, but governing is like prose or something like that. Like you have to be much more careful and surgical. And he's done that. A lot of it is just really good PR as well, like understanding how to sell things. God, the Commission of Government Efficiency directly playing off Doge, the fact that he balanced the budget, he had free childcare if you're 2 years old. Just all of these different policies that are hitting the heart of New Yorkers. No wonder Zohran-backed candidates are excelling. He has a lot of clout in New York City right now, and that is manifesting. So, you know, this is going to be an interesting primary season. We have all of these insurgent candidates who are unseating establishment Democrats. And for some reason, people online will still say that these insurgents aren't sufficiently progressive, while the establishment Democrats are saying they're too progressive. I say we just keep pushing good candidates who can communicate well and who care, care, care. And one more thing, actually, when it comes to Daria, Daria Liza, when it comes to her, I think that Zohran has this unique affability to him where he's a really chill guy. He's a really chill guy. He can basically connect with almost anybody. When Zohran Mamdani goes to a Knicks game or is around right-wingers or is going on these podcasts, he can connect with anybody. I think sometimes on the left, sometimes even on the far left, people can be a little bit off-putting in the manner with which they talk about these things. And I think Zohran needs to make sure he's putting people around him and choosing people that can maintain that affable vibe. Mm-hmm. Brad Lander, for example, is very affable. When I see someone like Daria Liza, I mean, I agree with some of her progressive positions. I agree with a lot of her progressive positions, but we just need to make sure we're picking people who are affable and can, who can speak to.
Yeah. Well, that's why like AOC and Mamdani are like the greatest allies that DSA's ever had, because they're just very relatable and they're easy to talk to. And I want to go back to what you said on, you know, Zionism and then socialism, because to me, it's like, and I made this point on News Nation last night, because I was on with Leland again. But it's the way that these words are used as slurs, essentially, is like they just shout, you're a socialist or you're a Zionist at somebody. Like the words end up ultimately not having any meaning anymore. Like anybody who is on that side and not celebrating Brad Lander because he's Jewish, like, it is very silly. And I think that that's just wrong. And I also will say, I think some of the attacks on Dan Goldman were also like really gross in that race. Like,
bro, yeah.
He was like refused to go to a coffee shop and they were graffitiing the front of his. I don't like any of that. I just think that that's gross. And I would encourage people that want to build community, like, to not do shit like that. Like, I understand that you're mad and I don't disagree with the reasons that you're mad. It's like, but don't conduct yourself in that manner because you're not doing yourself any favors. But like, you know, last night Leland was, you know, hyperventilating, and Leland, if you're watching this, I love you, buddy, but it's like, felt like it was hyperventilating about socialism rising in America again. And I'm like, what's the difference? Like they called Barack Obama a socialist jihadist. And he told me that they didn't. And I had to, I texted him a clip of Sarah Palin doing it in the 2008 presidential campaign. So like, they've been doing this forever. And it's just, it's really, really silly stuff. And I also just think like people are so fixated on the candidates that they love. And there's nothing wrong with that, but there are real meaningful victories that are happening here. And like, to go back to our state for a second, the Illinois 9 congressional primary, people love Kat Abu-Ghazaleh. And I thought she ran a really great special campaign. And I'm excited by the stuff she's doing with the mutual aid organization she's creating north of where I live. But Daniel Biss was also a very good candidate that was anti-AIPAC, and they spent a ton of money beating him. And so many people were bent out of shape about that because it wasn't their specific brand of candidate. It was just a different type of progressive. And I think we got to take the wins where they are, because the bigger problem in the country, beyond just like, you know, the establishment kind of feeling weak at times and maybe the left being like not relatable at times and us all trying to kind of figure out how to move the ball forward, is there is a massive concentration of wealth and power with a very small handful of group of people who are abusing and manipulating our campaign finance laws, that are profiteering at a length we've never seen before from this White House through Donald Trump. We have to break that concentration. And it's going to take people who live in New York and are maybe a little bit more liberal than me. And it's going to take people who are running in Kentucky and Nebraska and Montana and elsewhere that are maybe more conservative than I am. It's a big coalition and it's got to be a big tent, because it is really hard to get a Senate majority. It is really hard to get a congressional majority in the House. It is hard to govern. And I don't know what the right presidential candidate we're going to run in 2028 is. It's why I hate when people are super dismissive of AOC because she's a member of the DSA or she was a member of the DSA or whatever. I actually think she could do really well in that primary. But again, it's a big coalition that's going to be required to solve these issues. It's why I think the party as a whole needs to embrace economic populism, needs to be really smart about how we approach the next couple of years, because there is a sea change in America today. And if you are a member of the Democratic Party establishment and you're watching this right now and you're really upset about what happened last night in New York City, then you need to figure out a better way to navigate these issues. And you need to figure out some new policies to advocate and improve people's lives, because right now, Democratic Party primary voters do not believe that you can deliver for them. And everything is spiraling and getting worse. And this is that moment, okay? There were plenty of warning signs for Republicans before Donald Trump took over, the 2010 Tea Party wave. There were all kinds of other stuff that happened. The primary in 2012 with Mitt Romney, where they lost, there were lots of warning signs. They didn't heed any of them and adjust and save their party. And it got taken over by Donald Trump. So if you're worried that a Zohran Mamdani type is going to take over the Democratic Party, it will be because you were weak. Stop blaming the voters for why you lose and look introspectively for why you're not delivering for people. That's my advice to like anybody in my wing of the party. And I'm not really an establishment guy, in my opinion. I kind of sit in both lanes and I just kind of do work with good people that I like. But it's just, if you're worried about it, like, take responsibility for it, because you're responsible for why you lost.
Okay. Yep. Very, very well said. And I'm seeing some new data here. Last night's big wins for Mamdani-backed candidates were driven by young college grads, often at odds with the party's traditional working class base. So it's interesting to look up the makeup of these voters. One more thing. I want to address the allegations in chat. Somebody said, I love Adam, but you are borderline ageist. Like, I think the point to make here is I would never discriminate on somebody based on their age. There are many good candidates who are a little bit older, but the average age of senator right now is 64 years old. And it's not about
their age. It's older than that. It's 68.
68 years old? Yeah, but I want to be clear. It's not about the age. There can be 68-year-olds who are rather brilliant. I think Biden did a great job, and he was obviously a bit older.
I take a bullet for Rosa DeLauro.
Yeah, dude, there are so many great operators who I really respect. But I think that we have to acknowledge the reality of the age gap and the systematic underrepresentation that young people have. The average age of somebody who can vote in Chicago is 41 years old. But the average age of actual voters in Chicago is 56. And when you whittle it down to primary voters, it's like in their 60s. So there's a systematic underrepresentation of young people in politics. Not only young people in power, but young people voting, young people having their voice heard. So I think it's worth pointing this out. As two young people, I'm 23 and you're 40 years old, which
I'm 10. Whoa, hold on. I was going to make a joke about how old I was, but I'm not 40 yet. I'm 38. So how
my bad, my bad, my bad.
Jesus. You know what? Adam is ageist, everybody.
Everybody.
I'm with chat. Fuck Adam Mockler.
All right. Yeah. No, I wasn't even trying to make it like that. I'm just saying, like, we're both young people. You're 38 years old. Dude, you're 38 years old. The average representative or senator in Congress is double your age right
now. I know. It's crazy.
It's so worth pointing out that people like you and I are underrepresented in Congress, in power, and need to be talking about these things. And that's the framework with which I want to use it. I would never, ever discriminate somebody based on their age or prejudge somebody based on their age. Never, ever, ever. But I think it's really worth pointing out that that these candidates who won last night seem to just go against the status quo. Let me read this.
While you're reading that, can I just say something on age for a second? Because I talk about this on my show, is I just call it distance to problem. It's like, I think the biggest issue we have, one of the biggest issues we have in American politics today is just that so many of the people who are writing our laws simply do not understand the issues, right? And the way that technology is moving so fast, the way the economy is changing is so fast, having a 30-year gap between the average American voter and the average elected member of Congress is a huge problem. So how can I expect them to legislate on childcare and student loan debt and getting a job in this market when they've never had to experience any of that? And so the more people that we get who understand that, I think the better off Congress will be. And again, it just comes down to this. If you are like a moderate Democrat and you're unhappy with what's happening in New York City right now, it is because those candidates are not offering something that people want. And I understand that the narrative is this tension between, like, you know, young college grads are changing the Democratic Party and DSA is hijacking a party that we love. And I don't buy any of that. And there was a former chief of staff to Andrew Cuomo who was complaining about this on Fox News, because the easiest way to get on Fox News right now is to go shit on the Democratic Party, which is not how I get on, which is why you and I don't get on as much as we probably should. But like, it is, you lost the party, like you lost the voters, okay? Like, Andrew Cuomo was a shitty candidate and a sex pest and a lazy candidate, by the way. That's why Zohran Mamdani is the mayor of New York City right now. And like, I think there's a lot of frustrations that people have. Even Graham Plattner, if you're mad that Graham Plattner is the nominee in Maine, ask yourself why there was not a stronger campaign to defeat him in Maine. I think that's a legitimate question that needs to be asked, because I like Janet Mills a lot. Okay. I think she's a great governor, but she wasn't the right person for the moment. And so like, there's gotta be some
interesting. Didn't Chuck Schumer like coerce her into run? Didn't Chuck Schumer like beg her to run? Basically?
I don't know if he begged, but certainly recruited her to run. And by the way, like, you know, people want to shit on Chuck, but like Chuck got Roy Cooper to run in North Carolina and he's running away with the damn thing, 14 points in the lead. And, you know, Chuck does, in my view, more good than bad. And I'll defend Chuck. And I know people get mad at me. Same with Akeem. I think they get a bad rap because of the positions that they're in. But again, like, people are mad at the establishment. They're mad at the system. You know, somebody said in the comments, because you said they feel like the system doesn't work. And that person pointed out, hey, the system doesn't work. And that's right. It's like the system does not work. And it's especially not working for young people right now. They're getting absolutely killed in this economy. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is increasing his net worth by billions of dollars and people are mad at the Democratic Party. And the anti-Trump resistance stuff is not working enough. I mean, Dan Goldman, I've worked for both Goldman and Lander, okay? I think they're both good human beings and they're both, generally speaking, trying to do the right thing, even if I have some disagreements with both of them on policy. But like, Goldman was probably one of the top anti-Trump resistor guys out there, and that isn't working anymore. Like, people are looking for something beyond that, and our candidates have to recognize that if they want to win.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people can oftentimes be uncharitable to Schumer, but he also sometimes just doesn't understand the optics of what he's choosing. Like, in my opinion, I think he endorsed by far the weakest candidate in Michigan, for example, in the Senate race. And that's manifesting in the polls.
Well, that you and I can agree on. I mean, people are giving me shit in chat because I support McMorrow and she's currently, according to the last two polls, in third place. But like, again, I think everybody agrees Haley is not the future.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, a lot of the old guard of the Democratic Party is a little bit scared. They have their tail tucked between their legs, and people on Twitter are wondering, how could this happen? What is all of this? Well, as you pointed out, the system is not working. I guess I do need to reword it. It's not that people don't feel the system is working. It's that the system isn't working for them, and that is manifesting in their daily life. The reason why the system isn't working for them is because of powerful special interest groups that are distorting the way our institutions are supposed to work. Powerful special interest groups that pour money into candidates.
Yes.
Rewire what those candidates run for, can say, and cannot say. I mean, the reason why a lot of Democrats are kind of mealy-mouthed and walk around the truth on Israel is because they are getting donations from pro-Israeli Americans in the form of AIPAC. When they do that, then it kind of incentivizes them to maybe not speak about this in a certain way. When it comes to AI, these AI lobbies are spending so much money against people like Alex Borras because he would get into power and he would work against their interest and for the interest of the people. So we need to make sure we are voting in candidates who are refusing these special interest groups. In Illinois, I really liked Juliana Stratton.
I love Juliana.
She beat Raja Krishnamoorthy, and she did so without taking money from special interest groups. And you can see it in the way that she interviews. When Juliana Stratton, who is, you know, going to be the senator-elect soon once this general election happens, when she's interviewed, she will say how she feels. She will say exactly what she means. She'll call out any group that's needed to be called out. A lot of these politicians kind of walk around it in a way that is so incredibly obvious, and we're done with that. We can see when that is happening. We are done with that.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.